Welcome to Love at First Science, the podcast designed to dig deep into neuroscience, the human body, and anatomy. My name is Celeste. I'm a physio and I teach anatomy to yoga teachers. And this podcast is an archive of the lessons I've learned along the way in my attempt to bring a more science-based approach into the yoga world. Hey friends, thanks for tuning in. Just a quick reminder that I don't run any ads, so this podcast can only grow with your support. If you learned something new that you found useful, please do rate and review the podcast. And if you think the content can help someone get out of pain, improve their life, move without injuries, or even just feel more inspired, please share it with them. It would mean the absolute world to me. And you never know, we just might help elevate our community along the way. Probably one of the people I have the most respect for, he's my absolute hero, it's Dr. Eric Cobb. He started Z Health Performance. I've been studying in their curriculum, and I'm, as always, quoted as saying, it is even better than my university degree. It's better than any other course I've taken, and I highly encourage all of you to please at least do Essentials of Elite Performance, their most basic paid-for course. They also have a free one just before that called Neurofundamentals. At least do that, because it's going to give you this entirely unique perspective on the human body. Anyway, I'm bringing in Dr. Cobb to talk about headaches. I'm actually in one of their membership programs that guides us on how to assist people with headaches, chronic headaches. And we spoke about pain together in a previous episode. Do me a favor and go and listen to that. And then if you are someone who struggles with headaches, migraines, this is the place to be, because Dr. Eric Cobb, he is so smart about helping people. And I just can't get enough of the information he shares. He's a legend. Let's welcome Dr. Eric Cobb. This episode has been broken up into two parts, and this is part two. And another part that I was hoping you would touch upon, well, two things actually. One is the meninges, because I find that fascinating, that your brain can't actually feel pain. Well, sorry, the pain is an output. Let me correct myself. But meninges has the nociception. Yeah, the meninges has got all the nociceptors, which I'm just like mind-blowing, I think. Yeah. And then also the greater occipital nerve is really interesting. Can you please expand on those two structures?
Sure. Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out the fastest way to explain this. So if people are not familiar with brain anatomy, whenever we take a, you know, we look at the brain has coverings. Basically, it's almost like a skin on the brain, and it's three layers thick. And we generally refer to this as the meninges. Now, almost everyone has heard that the brain itself is insensate, meaning the brain itself doesn't have receptors to feel pain. And that's why they can do, you know, open brain surgery on people with a local anesthetic and keep them awake, because they give a local anesthetic and cut away the skull and they can, you know, be talking to them while they're operating on their brain. That's neat, but that is not the whole picture. Because just like our skin is sensitive, the skin of the brain is also sensitive. So the meninges, the covering of the brain, actually has a fairly high density level of what are called nociceptors. These are the types of receptors that are responsive to things that your brain might eventually interpret as pain. And I know that sounds like a long way of talking about it, but it's actually really important that you understand that. Just because a nociceptor is activated does not mean that consciously we will feel pain. It just means that there's something threatening happening in that, and the brain will decide if it's important enough to pay attention to. Now, whenever we look at the meninges themselves, we say, okay, if they are nociceptively active, what nerves are involved in that? Well, guess what? We're back to the trigeminal nerve. It actually supplies a lot of, it receives a lot of nociceptive input from the meninges. If we go to the back of the brain, we then will also potentially pick up some meningeal innervation from the vagus nerve, which is 10, and then also 12, which is the nerve, believe it or not, that innervates the tongue. So we have kind of this, some weird patterning, but generally whenever we're talking about nociception and meninges, we're interested again in the trigeminal nerve. Now, why this is super important, I think, in understanding this if you have migraine, is they've done some experiments, and if they basically inject or irritate the meninges, the response for most people is the development of a migraine, like the actual pain sensation that will come from that is very much this pulsating quality with often the, some of the other hypersensitivity issues that people will experience. So it is very important to understand kind of these meningeal components. So, you know, the question then becomes, well, what do we do about it? Honestly, pretty much the same stuff. The biggest difference, however, is that if we kind of dig more deeply into the anatomy of the meninges, there is the possibility of influencing behavior of the nerve endings of the meninges by working around the scalp itself. Now, obviously, I have no hair, which makes it super easy to understand, but there are some anatomical pathways or routes by which scalp or skin stimulation of the head may kind of create a little blockade effect for nociception within the meninges. So we have science around that, and I think we have tons of experience. What do people do when they have a headache? A lot of them will actually sit and massage their head or pull their hair if they have it. All of that is a form of kind of self-therapy where they're trying to create some kind of, again, alteration in the amount of meningeal irritation they're experiencing.
Yeah, they're just trying to get a bit of relief. And so this was so fascinating to me because one of the things that, one of the traditional tools that I think have kind of drilled into you is that, you know, it's all about deep tissue. You got to get in there. You got to break up the fascia. And then I started studying with Zia and they were, and you guys were like, no, you know, you can get quite a lot of stimulation just with like light dermal work. And I was like, wow. Yeah. And it's so cool because the way you spoke about it was great. It's like you can actually glide the skin in 8 cardinal directions, like north, south, east, west, and then obviously the ones in between. And you can actually do that on the skin, on your scalp to figure out where there's a blockage. And you can actually either go into the blockage or away from it, depending on how people retest to see if that could be a treatment modality. It's just fascinating.
Right. Yeah, it's something I, you know, over the years, I obviously come from the same school, a lot of deep tissue mobilization, manipulation. But over the years in studying neurology, it became very apparent that the brain just needs stimulus and it actually needs it at the right depth and the right spot. And I mean, this is where most of our interaction with the world happens. And while yes, there are underlying tissues, it's silly to ignore the stuff on top. But most of us that come from a manual background, we're taught that the skin's just kind of in the way. Like if we could just get it out of the way, then we could get to the important stuff.
But all that hard tissue that you need to break up.
But the skin is highly innervated, right? That's why we have it. It's to interact with the world and know what's going on. So if there are deficits in movement or deficits in sensation, that's definitely something to address because it can make an enormous difference for people. And it does make it very cool because it makes areas of the body that traditionally we couldn't do anything with because there we couldn't really do much with the muscles of the skull. It actually makes it possible to think, is this a therapeutic route? Could we do something there? I really enjoy that. And then as far as the, you know, if I find tension in one direction, do I push into it or push away from it? No one knows. I wish I could tell you, you know, you have, and it's funny because there are entire worlds of manual therapy built on going into the resistance and other worlds built on going away from the resistance.
But nobody retests these people.
That's the issue, right? That's what it comes down to is that you, this is where personalization is so important. How do you respond? You know, and most people respond much better to one version or the other. We just have to make sure we're doing some type of reassessment.
Yeah.
So
honestly, this is why you're my hero. I just, you have to accept that.
Well, all this comes down to is realizing that the human body is smarter than all of us.
Yeah.
You have to approach working with other people with humility. Because if you think that you have the answers, at some point you'll run into someone and you go, I don't have the answers. I'm going to actually, again, small rant here. This happened the other day and I almost lost my mind and shot a blog that probably would have cut my YouTube channel in half. But I shot a blog on blood pressure, right? And, you know, talking about some different methodologies that are available that have good research behind them using breathing and then isometric hand grips to lower blood pressure, right? Because a lot of people are on medication and it's still not controlled or they're looking for something
and
they can do.
And there's side effects.
Yeah. And actually, you know, I think that must have been a hot button because it got a lot of traction and a lot of people loved it. But then I had a few people come on and make just comments. Like the one that stuck in my head was, you can buy these devices on Amazon and decrease your bank account, or you could, you know, eat better, exercise, ride a bike, yeah, get up off the sofa, et cetera. And I just deleted it. But in my, it took me a little time to process it. But then what it really reminded me of the fact is that many people have never worked with people who are truly injured or truly sick.
Yeah.
They haven't. They have no frame of reference, right? So yeah, it sounds great, ride a bike, but what if you're working with a vet who has lost both legs in an explosion?
Yeah.
What if you're working with someone who's in stroke recovery and they can't walk more than 10 steps and they have high blood pressure? So, you know, it's most of us, I think, professionally get into a groove. We're like, hey, this is the kind of person I like to work with. I'm super successful with these people, so I'm going to stick here. Yeah. And that's awesome. But if you're going to expand as a professional, you have to take on more challenging things. And then at some point, you're going to run into something and go, yeah, I don't have the answer to this, which means you have to go back and study. And then you may study enough to go, no one has an answer for this.
Yeah, so we're still at the infancy.
We have to do some testing. We have to experiment. Mm-hmm. So anyway, it's a strange world, and neurology, I love it, like you said, for the same reason. It gives me almost endless options, and it also, as a result, gives me endless frustrations. But again, that's not my fault that the human body is this complex. When I first started teaching this information conceptually, I was actually very apologetic, because I knew people were coming to my courses and certifications going, hey, I want the answer. And they were hearing, well, there's 15 potential answers for this one question. And a lot of people got overwhelmed and they were like, you know, this isn't what I was looking for. And I'm like, I'm sorry, but that's not my problem.
Wow.
Right? If you're looking for, here's the four steps to fixing a migraine headache, I'm not your guy. Because I don't think that's true. And I don't think it's ethical to tell people that. What I can say is, here's 17 different things that we can progressively work through and build a personalized approach for you that has a high chance of helping. And I'm also not afraid to say, none of this is helping. We need help, right? We need, maybe you need to be on a CGRP medication, or maybe you need some very specific prisms put into some glasses, because none of the eye exercises we're doing are helping. That's okay. We don't have to be, none of us can have the expertise in every single field required to help people, but you do have to be smart enough to see it.
And also the humility to know that you maybe don't have the answer, because one of the things that you very eloquently described quite early on in the curriculum is that sometimes people will use the modalities that they're so used to, and then if the client doesn't get results, they almost put it on the client. They're like, oh, you've not been doing what you're supposed to be doing. And it's like, oh, no.
That's what everyone does.
Yeah, we get so like in our own, like, what's the word? Like arrogance. It's arrogance, really.
And there's usually some truth on both sides. Like, you may have given them great stuff, and we know most people aren't great at doing their homework. But at the same time, if you're the coach and they're not doing what you asked them to do, yes, you can blame them.
Responsibility.
Or you can take on the idea of, maybe they really suck at behavior modification. Yeah. And
that
maybe
was my
we need
favorite
to spend
lecture
more time on
you
that.
Ever did. You did this thing about, like, it's so funny, because I was just, quick side note, I was watching the Z Health videos, and sometimes I get a bit in a panic that, oh, I haven't learned everything. So I was like, I skipped the behavior one. And then I realized that my strategy wasn't working. So I decided to methodically go through every single video chronologically. And I got to the behavior one and I was like, you idiot for not watching this first, because it was so good. And yeah, anyway, that taught me a lot. I'm not going to go into that now, because I also, I think we haven't got a lot of time, and I really want to to ask you about vision and vestibular, because these are huge, like, oh my goodness, now that I understand the neural hierarchy, we're all spending so much time in proprioception, and this is not a waste of time, but it's like at the bottom of the chain. Can you please talk about this? It doesn't have to be even relation to headaches. I just like hearing you talk. Hey, my loves, real quick, if you are hypermobile, be sure to check out my book, Too Flexible to Feel Good, where my co-author and I share the latest science on how to help a bendy body feel awesome. If you already have the book, please do leave it an Amazon review. It helps more than you could ever know, and it just might help someone else feel a bit more stable in their bodies. The book is called Too Flexible to Feel Good, and you can get it from most online retailers.
The easiest way, I guess, to talk about this is, you know, we have to make sure that people understand that as human beings, we're designed to move, I will say, elegantly through the environment, right? We should be able to be extremely adaptable, which means that I should be able to be here in my office, nice level floor, hear a sound outside that scares me, run down the stairs, run out, run into the grass, jump over whatever's out there, get to the dog, all without killing myself, right? If I only could rely on my proprioception to make that happen, it would be a big problem, right? You have to understand that we constantly use our visual system to know where we are in space, to navigate the environment. On top of that, we then have this kind of onboard balancing system called our vestibular system that does way more than balance, by the way, that is absolutely vital. And the smallest problem in the vestibular system can disrupt everything that we do. So as a movement practitioner, you know, people have probably, you can watch other podcasts or whatever, but I had some early experiences when I was first in practice that blew my mind, where people had neck pain or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I thought I was doing all this great stuff for them. And actually what fixed them was getting their lens prescription changed and their glasses. And I got super frustrated about that, because I thought, hey, I spent all this time, all this money in school, I'm in practice, and I'm doing all this manual therapy and movement work with people and exercise rehab. And what they really needed was to fix their eyes. So that actually was kind of a big driver for what eventually has turned into Z-Health, because it is impossible to divorce movement from visual and vestibular input. However, most of our educational models give very little thought to these systems, because they are thought to be too specialized. So in other words, you know, as a physician, you may be taught, well, you know, if they've got an eye pointing out to the right, make a referral to the neurologist. But as a physician, you're not going to be taught to evaluate very much the quality of saccades, smooth pursuits, convergence, divergence, all these different eye movements, unless it looks like they've had a serious brain injury. The vestibular system is even more complex, and generally it's not even considered unless someone walks in and, you know, falls over, you know, they're having dizziness, they're having vertigo, then they'll be evaluated. So if you want to be more full scope in everything that you do as a movement practitioner, these are systems that you have to have at least a basic understanding of, even if you don't want to work with them. Like, if they intimidate the heck out of you, that's okay. But you still need to be able to test them and go, wow, look, when your eyes are open and you're trying to do this particular exercise, you have pain. If I ask you to close your eyes and you do that same movement and you don't have pain, maybe there's some information there that reducing visual input in this particular movement is decreasing your stress. What does that tell you? Well, that tells you that the eyes are probably playing a role in that pain presentation. And if you want to solve it, you may have to eventually look at their eyes. So that's a little rant about vision and vestibular in general. I believe that they should be cornerstone foundations of assessment and education for all movement professionals. I don't care if you're a DC, a PT, a DO, whatever, right? Just a coach, a trainer.
Preschooler. Just preschooler. Everyone.
Yeah,
teachers. Just get it in there.
Yeah, it actually should be screened in schools. There's enough evidence showing up now with visual issues and vestibular issues, some relationship potentially to learning challenges, that these should be screens that are performed everywhere. So anyway, I'm very passionate about it, not because I actually love having to teach people about this stuff because it's actually complicated, but because the results I think are so profound that I don't think it's something that we, again, ethically can avoid. When you're talking about headaches specifically, I mean, everything we just discussed, the visual system, the vestibular system, all that stuff's happening in the same spots that you're having the pain. And as we mentioned, when we talk about the brainstem, you know, the top has to do with eye movements and also what's going on with your pupils and visual acuity. The middle part is involved in some eye movements and also processing vestibular input. So all these different things that we were talking about in terms of needing to address to change pain processes for people, you would expect then that the visual and vestibular systems are significantly involved, and they often are. In fact, there's a whole subcategory of migraine called vestibular migraine.
Okay, there you go. That's
so it's recognized, but you need to know that it's there so you can actually do some testing.
And people don't know how to test. That's what frustrates me. It's like they don't even ask you. Anyway, yeah. I mean, asking I think is one thing, but testing is a whole different thing because, you know, I'll sometimes take history and I'll say, you know, how's your balance? And yeah, pretty good. I can balance pretty well on one leg. And then I screen their vestibular.
They're lying to you.
But they literally get such bad symptoms from the slightest head turn. Either they just want to lie down and go to sleep, or they're dizzy, or they feel like they're going to throw up. I'm like, this is not normal. Like, we need to look at this.
It's crazy. I'm always amazed at how good people are at compensating for deficits. Like, because you will, once you really get into this, you'll meet people, you try and have them turn their head left and they want to throw up. And I'm like, how do you drive?
Yeah. It's crazy. How do they navigate life with like feeling this unwell? Yeah, they literally turn their whole body. Yep. Especially, I mean, the client, she couldn't move her eyes. But when we tried to do the vestibular ocular reflex cancellation, where the head, the eyes had to move together, she was really good at that side because she's always moving her head to get her eyes to that direction.
Absolutely.
It's just like, guys, please just, you don't know what I'm saying right now if you haven't studied with Z-Health. So the only solution to this problem is to study with Z-Health.
Believe it or not, I had a patient 20 plus years ago that drove 2 miles further every day to go to work. So he would only have to take right turns. Because if he tried to turn his car left, he would get sick So this is just like, people are adaptable. And I sometimes go, we're probably too adaptable for our own good. Like that's at some point, if you realize you can only turn your car to the right,
you need to learn that.
You want to speak to someone.
But the problem is these poor people do ask for help and then they don't get the help that they need. This is what breaks my heart. And this is why I am really like telling people a lot about Z-Health, because it helped me so much. Like, you were talking about being evaluated in school for vestibular issues and how they could help your learning. I sucked at school and I know I'm smart. That's what's so frustrating. And like, now that I'm like doing my vestibular and my vision drills every day, and now I'm sitting down to study and I'm actually enjoying it and I can focus and just like quality of life has gone up dramatically.
That's really, really great to hear. And, you know, and it's something that we see with regularity. I think there is, I think one danger that we run into talking about all this, like neurology is super cool. And there are times when you do one or two things for someone and it's literally life-changing. But I always try to emphasize the fact that that's not the anticipated outcome, right? It's awesome when it happens, but most of this is a progression. We are trying to change brain structures. We're trying to drive plasticity, and that occurs through practice and repetition. So normally when clients, you know, or whatever, tell me, hey, thank you so much for all this stuff, my life's so much better, I usually go, I didn't do anything, right? I just went, try this, and then they did the work. So congratulations on doing the work. If you do the work, cool stuff happens. If you don't do the work, bad stuff happens.
Yeah. The thing is, we're always evolving and the evolution is neither good nor bad. It just is. And we have to choose which direction the rudder is pointing. Yeah. Which way is your ship pointing?
Yeah. And that's, you know, tied into this topic. It's interesting because what we'll actually see, and when we look at brain scans of people with chronic headache or chronic jaw issues, we actually see changes in brain structure over time. Wow. Like, they're becoming better at having migraines. They're becoming better at having jaw issues. And that's why I think we are so dedicated to this idea of, let's find things to drive changes in that pain signal. Let's try changes in movement. because ultimately we want to shift plasticity back into a more normal direction. I was looking at a cool study in preparation for this call on the jaw, and you know, they did functional MRIs of people with chronic TMD and found brain changes, and then they put them on splint therapy and exercise therapy, and then they reevaluated them. They're like, "Hey, cool, the brain changed." Yeah, I know, right? That's the cool thing about it. But we have to
changing.
Do it in the right way. Yeah.
Oh man, I could talk to you for a long time. We could have loads of rants, but there's no lights on in this room, and it's getting dark. So I think it's time to end the thing. Just before you go, though, can you tell us if you had one message for the world, what would it be?
Oh Lord,
it can be anything.
Yeah. I forget you always ask these kind of interesting questions.
sorry.
One message for the world. I think I'll stay on topic for now, in terms of what we do. If you have been struggling with a given issue for a long period of time, whatever that might be, the natural tendency of the human brain, when you don't make progress on something, is to quit, right? It's to give up. So, and as an example, if we're doing vision therapy with someone and we're trying to work on visual acuity, if I give them something that's so hard to read that it's super blurry, their brain will just turn off. It just goes, it's too hard, I won't do it. And I think that happens a lot when people are dealing with chronic pain issues, chronic movement issues, trying to change a behavior. At some point, it just seems so challenging that the brain says, you know what, I give up. My encouragement would be, don't do that. I've heard 1,000 times in my life, I've tried everything. I've seen everyone. And I'm like, well, nope, you've never seen me. Have you tried this? No. Have you tried this? No. So you haven't tried everything. You think you have because you're frustrated. If you find yourself frustrated and you feel like you've tried everything, the highest likelihood is that you probably haven't. So keep looking for people who have a broad scope, a broad viewpoint on how these things work together, because there's probably some ideas out there that when put together well, might help you make progress in a positive direction. So that would be my encouragement.
It's funny because Mike, who I've interviewed also twice for the show, he said, never give up hope. And I feel like that is that's the underlying message. Don't give up hope. There is answers out there for all of the struggles that we have. So thank you so much. Where can people find out more about Z Health? I mean, through me, obviously. I'll be your billboard.
So our website is zhealtheducation.com. If you're a professional interested in kind of our approach, we have an 8-hour free online course and a free ebook called Neurofundamentals. If you're brand new to all this stuff, we have then our whole certification curriculum. We're Z Health Performance on Instagram. We're Z Health Performance on YouTube. So you can find us kind of all over the place. And we're pretty active on social media, despite my actual disdain for social media.
It's so hot.
But, you know, we're just trying to get information out there. So those are the easiest places to find us. And again, we try and make all this information available. If you are a client and you're not interested in professional training, on our website, we also have what's called Find a Trainer page. So if you're interested in finding a practitioner who could maybe help you look at some of the issues that you're having, absolutely go there. You can put in your location and find people close. As well as a lot of our trainers now also do online work. So there's a lot of possibilities out there.
Yeah, there's so many. Thank you so much for your time, Dr. Cobb. You're a legend.
Absolutely. You're very sweet. It's good to see you.
You too. Thanks for listening, everyone. That was part 2. Next week, we'll be welcoming a new guest. Remember, if this episode was helpful at all, please do share, rate, and review.